information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
April is the cruelest month, and summer will surprise us. Welcome to episode 117 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's the 3rd of April, 2009, and we've got all the news and politics and conspiracies and cover-ups you can cram into 2 hours. Oligarchy in the UK, G20, NATO, and the New World Order, Obama, Brown, and the Crown, banksters, protests, provocateurs, and the people, Police State International, and surviving the Econo crash, plus Chaniacs, PNACs, and you, One World Trade Center, and 9/11 DNA, pharmaceutical industrial complex, water wars, recalls, drug wars, and the death of William Bennett. It's all here. It's April 3rd, 2009, episode 117 of MediaMonarchy.com.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
London calling. Yeah, don't look to us. Phony Obama mania has bitten the dust. That's right, you got it. It's Media Monarchy. It's episode 117, and it's April 3rd, 2009. April is the cruelest month. Of course, T.S. Eliot from the Wasteland. My name is James Evan Pilato. I am your host and webmaster of the site and show that I call Media Monarchy. Live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here at the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. As I can look out the window now on our ground level new studios, and I can see people coming and going outside, we just got to make them hear me from inside. Thanks to the worldwide home of free speech, revereradionetwork.com, simulcast, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and of course, Boulder Free Radio, KBFR 93.9 in Boulder, Colorado, and Free Radio Olympia, The Fro, 98.5, our neighbor to the north in Washington. Thanks to the both of them, and thanks to all of you who get in touch with me through all the little social networking portals. Facebook, MySpace, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, Skype, Twitter, and of course iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org is where you can get the podcast every week. Trying to cram as much as I can into a well-produced and enjoyable, though excruciating, swath of news. So let's, of course, glance at Google News right now, the morning of April 3rd. We, of course, have the Obamasai holding a town hall in Strasbourg, France. Of course, the globalists hopping from the G20 now to the NATO summit in France. Iowa court says gay marriage ban is unconstitutional. And four reportedly shot and hostages taken in Binghamton, New York. Of course, we are in the season of mass shootings. We have seen many. And if the copycat effect holds true, we will see many more, of course, as we approach the granddaddy date of April 20th. And I'm sure we'll have more and more on that as we get closer. So this is the first episode of the new month of April, and of course, there's not a lot of fooling you're going to find here on Media Monarchy. If you're a longtime listener, I thank you and appreciate it. If you're a new listener, we go through all the news, left side, right side, be damned, and try and get at the heart of the matters. So, of course, what's taken up front page attention for the most of the week? The build-up, the big show, now the after-party. We'll go in order through the G20 summit. Several postings, so, of course, we're going to cover the money masters, the banksters, the agent provocateurs, the oligarchs, the elites, inbred royalty, and all of it. So let's try and go in order here, and we'll start with the posting, arrest and protest in advance of London G20. Five activists arrested in G20 bomb plot as London went into lockdown for the arrival of the Anglo-American oligarchs and banksters. So let's take a report from the Daily Mail. Five people suspected of terrorist offenses were being questioned by the police in connection with an alleged plot to target the G20 summit. Three men, two women were arrested under the Terrorism Act in Plymouth over the 3 days leading up to the G20, officers uncovered a cache of weapons and suspected extremist material during a house search. They were questioned over claims they plan to target the meeting of the world's most powerful political leaders in London. The five were held after officers found weapons, imitation weapons, suspicious devices, and material relating to political ideology, whatever that is. So another report, digging a little deeper, and not the first time or the last time, we're going to hear from Cryptogon.com. Great blog, great news source. Five held over suspected plot to disrupt G20 summit with explosives. Cryptogon asks, how will you know the difference between false flag operations and war? False flag ops are symbolic. The main goal is to create fear and obedience to state authorities through the use of propaganda in the aftermath of the event. The driving propaganda after the fact is the main payload, not the event itself. While it is possible that imbeciles will target individual executives for assassination or use improvised explosives to create work for janitors in corporate lobbies, these types of attacks are likely to be acts of state because of their utility for propaganda purposes. Think about it. Who benefits from attacks like these? The stoned white Rastafarian soy people with Bozo the Clown wigs and fair trade hacky sacks will get the blame. It's all the terrorists, right? War, on the other hand, targets critical infrastructure. Examples: financial transaction clearing is shut down, stock markets are shut down, communication systems are damaged or destroyed, energy distribution systems are damaged or destroyed. While it's possible that attacks of this nature could be false flag, it's not likely because unmanageable cascading effects could result. So, as the situation continue to devolve, expect corporate states to try to short-circuit street-level activists with false flag ops and heavy follow-up on propaganda linking them with the terrorists. We can say now with hindsight, fortunately, we didn't see, at least that we know of, any egregious acts of inside job, false flag, provocateuring. But the last report with a clip on this first posting of the G20 arrest and protest in advance of the London G20 from Russia Today. London protest sparks fears of riots.
The biggest mass demonstration since the beginning of the economic crisis. An estimated 35,000 people gathered from all over the country. Armed with banners and flags, the protesters embarked on a several hour long march through the heart of London, organized by a rainbow alliance of more than 100 trade unions, church groups and charities that put people first march was united by a common theme, jobs, justice and climate. The colourful procession ended up in Hyde Park for a peaceful afternoon rally.
We won't accept the old politics, we won't accept the old financial institutions anymore. From now on, we're going to put people first.
Thousands of people marched through London determined to fight for a fundamental change. And although this fight has been peaceful so far, it is just the first event in a chain of protests that some say could lead to the worst public disorder in a decade.
And that's all before the G20 began. One thing I want to note real quickly, there is a comment from my man Zach at the bottom of this post, arrests and protests in advance of London G20, where they note that just in time for the G20, Obama arrived in his new armor-laden limo, the Beast, which, of course, is protected against EMP attacks. So, hat tip to my man Zach for sending me that, and we're actually going to get a little more into that in just a little bit. The next one, London Calling, which gave us our intro. G20 banksters, provocateurs, and the people. Now, at the top, I wrote that this was going to be the place that I would put any updates on any agent provocateur, false flag, protester, black bloc, anarchist kind of action. And there is a little bit. But, starting at the top, from Raw Story, from Raw Replay, from The Guardian: world leaders wrangled Wednesday on how a London summit could fix the global economy as demonstrators attacked a bank in an anti-capitalist riot in the British capital. Demonstrators laid siege to the Bank of England and smashed the windows of a nearby bank that has become a symbol of the financial crisis rescue carried out by the British government, which was discussed at the Group of 20 summit. Several thousand invaded the main financial district, and tensions spilled over when protesters smashed their way into a major branch of RBS, the Royal Bank of Scotland, which was state-owned last year. Again, more links to VOA News, as well as more from Raw Story. The amount of clips I'm going to play covering the G20 are very limited. However, the amount of audio, video, photo, and articles relating to this are voluminous, to say the very least. There are a lot of videos and audio clips within the posts. Again, the radio version is sort of the truncated, bite-sized edition of what MediaMonarchy.com can give you if you dive into it. I take a lot of time putting a lot of research and a lot of links and a lot of documentation that you can check out for yourself. Protester said he had a responsibility to be there. A nice long post in collecting a lot of videos from a man dug at blacklistednews.com, G20 anarchists set London financial district ablaze, and then we get to some ugly updates. One man died during the G20 protests in London. This from The Guardian, as well as Press TV and InfoWars and The Independent and The Guardian. A man died during the G20 protests in central London as a day that began peacefully ended with police saying bottles were thrown at police medics trying to help him. The man had collapsed within a police cordon set up to contain the crowds who had assembled in central London and the city to protest over the G20 summit. The Guardian notes that there were 63 arrests on that day. Gerald Salente of the Trends Research Institute featured prominently in the Obama deception, I believe featured in the upcoming episode of The Corbett Report. He's been all over the place, and unfortunately, he's generally right with his predictions, and unfortunately, he's saying that this is just the beginning.
And all of these companies are now, you know, saying, hey, come and lease my space or buy my building at extremely discount rates, which leads me to your article, the collapse of 09. You're predicting that the retail and commercial real estate bust will be way far greater than what we saw in housing.
That's where the real leverage is. I mean, take New York. You had like MacLow, for example, where they put down $60 million and leveraged $6 billion. And it's not only the retail sector. How about all the brokerage firms, the banks, all of the consolidations and bankruptcies? Who's going to rent all this vacant retail space? This country's been way overbuilt for a long time. So this is where the real credit crisis is. It's going to make the subprime look like peanuts, because no one's going to rent this empty vacant space. You're going to see ghost malls start springing up all over America.
Well, and then, so the whole ripple effect that we always have in our economy, that's going, all these companies going bust, well, obviously they're laying off thousands upon thousands of workers. They're getting the jobs report out Friday. Already, you know, this advance report, 742,000 jobs lost in 1 month, folks. This is just the beginning.
Exactly. Look, you see, current events form future trends. When I was here the last time, I think it was in August, we said there were going to be riots and protests. Voila, there they are. And I love the language they use. These are anarchists and whatever they call them. How about people that are really angry? You think they're out there too? No, people are going to be taking to the streets. They're losing everything. I'm a Bronx boy by birth. And my saying is, when people lose everything and they have nothing left to lose, they lose it. Mm-hmm. And they're going to lose it with these congressmen and these senators. Who came up with this too big to fail mantra?
Yeah, you don't like that at all. Why?
Well, first of all, I could say with full authority, their mother's not better than mine. And this is supposed to be a free market system. And they're calling it socialism, Rebecca. It's not socialism. By definition, government-controlled capitalism is called fascism. Take it from Mussolini, he coined it.
And there it is. Corporatism. Fascism. And that's honestly what we're seeing. People throw a lot of the ism words around without knowing some of their actual definitions. And we're seeing the definition of fascism, again, according to Mussolini. Now, they mentioned the jobs report, which, of course, is out. So if we look at MarketWatch right now, economic report, 5.1 million jobs lost in this recession. However, back to the posting London Calling, G20 banksters, provocateurs, and the people, we have one headline from Danger Room: arrests, armored vehicles, and space hijackers in London protests. However, Paul Joseph Watson asking the question, who controls the Black Bloc anarchists? If anyone, I would say, or add. The British authorities seem to have little problem with allowing a group of violent Black Bloc anarchists to smash up the RBS building while provoking police, despite the group announcing their target in advance, yet a legitimate anti-poverty organization had its accreditation to protest at the G20 removed on the orders of Downing Street. Apparently, if you wear black hoods and scarves, smash up private property, and provoke police, then that's absolutely fine and you'll be left largely untouched. But if, God forbid, you're a middle-of-the-road anti-poverty group that just wants to peaceably march down the street, an anti-poverty group expressed outrage after its accreditation to attend the G20 summit was suddenly withdrawn on Wednesday, the day before. Benedict Southworth, the group's director, said that the decision was part of the government's plan to, quote, stage manage events and prevent voices of dissent and disagreement being heard. The Black Bloc anarchist assault on the Royal Bank of Scotland building certainly had an air of being stage managed. The target was announced in advance. The authorities knew that the building was a prime target, and yet it was the only one in the street not boarded up. A cafe across the street was boarded up, and yet the RBS building was left completely vulnerable to attack. You should check out the photos that go along with that. It's very telling. It looks very stage managed. Wrapping up this London Calling post is a disgusting story from The Guardian. You got to read it to believe it. But it's the banksters' view of G20. I'm sure not everyone. And again, when we're talking about all this corruption in the world, it's very easy to say, oh, the government, or oh, small factions. Small, rogue, corrupt factions. So, from The Guardian, the banksters' view of the G20, betting on deaths and arrests. At Coq d'Argent, the restaurant atop the distinctive salmon-colored building at No. 1 Poultry, adjacent to Bank Underground Station, the bankers appeared slightly drunk on the excitement of the protest down below, basking in sunshine, ordering wine, and necking oysters. Two traders based in an opposite RBS on Bishopsgate said they had walked across the city, quote, to have a nice lunch and chill out. Sipping coffee after three courses and a few Marlboro Lights, they were angry that the police didn't seem to be making any arrests. It's kicking off over in Bishopsgate. The demonstrators are goading the police and hitting them with sticks, but they're just letting them. They're not arresting anyone. And these two wanted to see the long arm of the law carting a few protesters away because they had a financial interest in arrests. Quote, I'll make money if they arrest more than 140, he said. Traders, he explained, were putting spread bets on the number of arrests, with the quoted spread on Bloomberg at 130 to 140. They were also paying out on deaths, and if more than 20 demonstrators are injured by horse charges. The riots, they said, were only a minor inconvenience. Quote, we've been in this morning, made a lot of money, and now we're chilling out. You couldn't quite forget what was happening, though, the constant drone of helicopters competing with the increasingly noisy bankers. And I see at the bottom of this posting a comment from Jay that I hadn't seen, where they note that Gerald Celente is interesting and scary. Oligarchy in the UK, Obamasiah, G20, and the bankster New World Order. So our misleaders have gathered to pose as saviors from an econocrash that they created. And so we saw, in the midst of the summit, the G20 came down from the mountain with its six commandments toward a new world order. Now, of course, I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek, however, but the links are there, and that's what they're calling it. Six pledges toward a new world order. We're not going to go through them. We're not going to go through their policy papers and all those things right now. There's no time. But again, there is massive documentation for all of this and videos. Jumping back a couple days before the G20 summit, ahead of G20, council told to switch off illegal 15 million pound CCTV. This from The Guardian, and this is disturbing. The security operation at this week's G20 summit was thrown into chaos when it emerged that the entire network of Central London's wireless CCTV cameras will have to be turned off because of a legal ruling. The Department for Transport ruled that Westminster Council's mobile road cameras, a third of the authority's CCTV network, quote, do not fully meet the resolution standards required and must be switched off by midnight tomorrow. The blackout begins on the eve of the summit when world leaders arrive in the capital and protesters take to the streets. My girlfriend pointed out, and I'm still not actually sure what they mean when they say do not fully meet the resolution standards required. Are they speaking about resolutions parliamentary, or are they speaking about resolution of the video of the CCTV? Again, all the links are there. I may just be missing it. To have all these cameras turn off, of course, brings to mind all sorts of other funky communication things that happen, you know, like the phone's not working for 20 minutes after JFK was shot. Or, of course, the cameras malfunctioning in London when they had their little 7-7 terror op. But again, we can look at this with a little bit of hindsight and say, okay, there were no spectacular explosions. An editorial from DailyMail.com asking the question, where is the new JFK we expected? But to the report about the beast, which of course could be the Antichrist. However, right now we're talking about the Obamamobile. This is from the BBC. You can take the man out of the White House, but you can't take the White House away from the man. And with Obama arriving in London for the G20 with a large contingent of White House staff with him, hundreds of security guards, doctors, chefs, and others are accompanying Obama on his visit, and the entourage includes a number of presidential vehicles, including his new armor-plated limousine, the Beast, and of course, the plane, Air Force One. The 4,000-square-foot Boeing 747 is equipped for the president to work while he's in the air. The exercise-loving president will even be able to use the onboard gym to keep fit in flight. The plane is fitted with some robust security equipment, including shields to protect its instruments from an electromagnetic pulse. The communications equipment is even capable of withstanding radiation from a nuclear attack. More from express.co.uk as well as Sky News. Now, I'm not sure if the Beast is outfitted with this same guard against electromagnetic pulse attacks. EMP basically blows out electronics, which I imagine would be a big piece of ammo for whatever possible 9/11 to be cyber 9/11, false flag, psyop they got cooking. But everything's on right now, so we'll keep doing it. You can, of course, see lots of video. There's raw video from the AP, and I'm sure lots of other places, of the Obamas meeting the inbred UK royalty. However, the, of course, funny thing is that Obama gave the Queen an iPod. This from Christian Science Monitor. Well, it's better than giving her a bunch of DVDs that don't work. President Obama went to Buckingham Palace in London, where he and First Lady Michelle had a lovely tea with the Queen. The press corps from both sides of the pond was paying close attention to the meeting. After all, it was another gift exchange, something the president didn't do too well the last time out. Gordon, New World Order Brown, gave Obama an ornamental pin holder carved from the timbers of the HMS Gannett, an anti-slave ship from the 1800s. President Obama, on the other hand, treated the gift exchange like a secret Santa party, forking over a bunch of American movies on DVD. And if that wasn't bad enough, it turns out they didn't work. They weren't compatible with British DVD players. That was a few weeks ago when Gordon, New World Order Brown, was here in the States. if you're even slightly tech savvy, you have to shake your head at going, they didn't fucking know that it's Powell in the UK? And this is our tech president? So again, all those stories are there, and you can laugh at them as you should. G20 meetings, the European Union is in tatters. That's from Global Research. However, from dailymail.co.uk, Brown invokes God and the New World Order in his St. Paul sermon. Gordon Brown has made an overtly religious call for a new world order based on the deep moral sense shared by all faiths. Making the first speech by a serving prime minister at St. Paul's Cathedral in London, he quoted scripture as he urged people to unite to forge a new global society. And again, during the summit, he said, New World Order. And again, as if I have to tell you, not too long ago, if you talked about the New World Order, you were a nut, and it didn't exist. But now it does, and it's good. Of last few headlines and updates on this posting, oligarchy in the UK, Rasmussen poll on non-existent global currency issue. This is some funny left cover foundation gatekeeping from thinkprogress.org. Again, acting as though there isn't talk about a one world currency. And we're going to get into how, of course, the sides have shifted, but they're all still playing the phony fucking left-right paradigm. CFR unveils global governance agenda. That's from oldthinkernews.com. However, we have old Clintonite Dick Morris talking to right-wing supposed talking head Sean Hannity. However, they now agree with the conspiracy theory people, and there is a new world order.
There is a big thing that's going to happen in London at this G20, and then they're hiding it, they're camouflaging it, they're not talking about it. Coordination of international regulation. What they are going to do is to put our Fed and our SEC under the control, in effect, of the IMF.
Oh, come on. They're going to take, do this.
That's what was in the draft agenda. They call it coordination of regulation. What it really is putting the American economy under international regulation.
Yeah.
And those people who have been yelling, oh, the UN's going to take over global governance, they've been crazy. But now, they're right.
Yeah, well, when Geithner said, he would be open to the idea of a global currency.
Exactly.
Yeah. Those conspiracy people had said and suggested that for years. You're not wrong.
And you know, it's they always do at these conferences is they have the center show is here, yeah. And the side show they don't want you to pay attention to.
Right.
The center show is the size of the stimulus package.
Yeah.
The real show is international regulation of the financial institutions, which is going to happen under the IMF control. And remember, the IMF is run by Europeans,
right.
The World Bank by Americans.
There's a lot to dissect in there. However, we don't really have time. Again, I'll just reiterate that now that the parties have shifted, we now see people like Michael Savage saying the Obama administration is going to pull off a Reichstag false flag event. And we've got the left saying, oh, one world currency. No, that doesn't exist. So the things that you can easily see in your enemy party, when the tables turn, oh, you're just totally blind to it as you pay your allegiance to this two-party system that has done nothing for you in the last 50, 60 years, maybe. But I digress. World Bank president admits agenda for global government. Max Kaiser and the bankster bonus face-off. That's over on Catherine Austin Fitz's Solari.com blog. U.S. signals new era for global economy. That's from the Washington Post. The Bilderberg chairman, of course, notes that the Bilderbergs helped create the euro. They just calmly mention it. And lastly, two links to the bizarre story of Mexico's president being given a copy of George Orwell's 1984 by Queen Elizabeth. We've got the Telegraph, and we've got Kurt Nimmo writing for InfoWars.
Queen Elizabeth's gift to Calderon, a limited edition copy of 1984. Why would she give him that? It's the handbook. Hillary says it's her favorite book. They love it. But let's try and wrap up this whole ugly G20 mess with the last posting that I have on it, put up late last night, early this morning for you. G20 updates, meet the new world order, same as the old world order, where again and again and again, Gordon Brown tells us that the new world order is emerging.
But today, the largest countries of the world have agreed a global plan for recovery and reform. This involves the biggest interest rate cuts in history, the biggest fiscal stimulus we have ever seen, the biggest increase in resources in the history of our international institutions, with $250 billion, more money than ever before, for trade finance as well. For the first time, we have a common approach around the world to cleaning up banks' balance sheets and restoring lending. We are engaging in a deep process of reform and restructuring of our international financial system for now and for the future. And we have maintained our commitment to help the world's poorest. And we have put more money aside for that and also for a green recovery. These are not a single collection of actions. This is collective action, people working together at their best. I think a new world order is emerging, and with it the foundations, a new and progressive era of international cooperation. We have resolved that from today, we will together manage the process of globalization to secure responsibility from all and fairness to all. And we've agreed that in doing so, we will build a more sustainable and more open and a fairer global society.
Novus Ordo Seclorum. The new world order out of chaos. From the Associated Press, as well as the New York Times, as well as AccountancyAge.com, the G20 to give $1 trillion to the World Bank and the IMF. World leaders pledged $1.1 trillion in loans and guarantees to struggling countries and agreed Thursday, April 2nd, to crack down on tax havens and hedge funds, but failed to reach sweeping accord on more stimulus spending to attack the global economic decline. At the end of a highly anticipated one-day gathering, leaders of the group of 20 nations said they would upgrade an existing financial forum to serve as an early warning monitor to flag problems in the global financial system. They did not, however, satisfy U.S. and British calls for new stimulus measures, nor did European politicians get their goal of a global financial super-regulator. Not yet, anyway. We note from Your World Now on YouTube that last night Anderson Cooper noted the New World Order and the G20. So is this some kind of New World Order? There is the clip for you. And, of course, we note that Anderson Cooper is heir to the Vanderbilt riches. Possibly had dealings, you know, with the CIA when he was at Yale and maybe Scroll and Key or Book and Snake. Global Research.ca notes at the G20 summit, the neoliberal agenda was untouched and the next phase of the crisis is looming. The G20 summit meeting in London from April 1st onward was loudly announced and publicized. Those 20 industrialized and emergent countries are meeting to find solutions to the crisis. But long before the end of the summit, it's clear they won't rise to the challenge. The G20 was not created in order to provide genuine solutions. It was hastily summoned the first time in November 2008 to salvage the powers that be and try to plug the breaches in capitalism. It's therefore impossible for this body to opt for measures that are sufficiently radical to save the day. There are two important and informative links within there. Just over to Wikipedia, where you can read just the breakdown of the 2009 G20 London Summit, as well as its precursor, the 2008 G20 Washington Summit. now it gets ugly. And this does get at the heart of what has been going on for a very long time. And this is undocumented. This isn't a conspiracy. We just don't like to talk about it in polite company. But Steve Watson has done it. The first black president grovels to a virulently racist royal family. The sight of any U.S. president literally bowing to British royalty is enough for many Americans to become outraged. However, the fact that the latest to do so is America's first black president made yesterday's exchange between Obama and the Queen of England even more troublesome. Prior to meeting the Queen and her notoriously racist husband, Prince Philip, Obama announced that he loves her, and as in the imagination of people throughout America, the Queen stands for decency and civility. Which is a funny choice of words, as if to say it's only in your imagination that these people are decent and civil. How repugnantly ironic that the first black president of the so-called free world should refer to the most entrenched, prejudiced, and elitist institution in Europe as an icon of civility. Reports circulated regarding Obama practicing bowing and brushing up on courtly etiquette ahead of the meeting. Michelle Obama curtsied to the Queen, however, later she was treasonously caught inappropriately putting her hands on the glorious monarch. The London Telegraph even issued a report on how the move was a departure from what is considered appropriate protocol when meeting the Queen. So Michelle dare touch the hem of the garment. Prince Philip has made so many racist remarks in public that they literally fill a book with a link for you to ILXOR.com. It's well documented that Prince Philip's sister Sophia was married to Christopher of Hesse-Cassel, an SS colonel who named his eldest son Karl Adolf in Hitler's honor. Indeed, all of Philip's sisters married high-ranking Nazis. 2 years ago, more revelations of Philip's Nazi links emerged in a book that featured never-before-published photographs of Philip, age 16, at the 1937 funeral of his elder sister Cecile, flanked by relatives in SS and brown shirt uniforms. Philip also helped start the World Wildlife Fund with former Nazi SS officer Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who, of course, is closely affiliated with the founders of the Bilderberg International Power Group. Prince Philip was also trained in the Hitler Youth. His belief in Nazi ideology is clear when one looks at what he has said on the subject of overpopulation. In the foreword to his 1986 book, If I Were an Animal, Prince Philip wrote, quote, "In the event that I'm reincarnated, I would like to return as a deadly virus in order to contribute something to solve overpopulation." There are many links and documentations within that to dispel any doubt you may have. There is a story from Russia Today and a video where they cover and call it all a faux pas when he asked Obama if he could tell the leaders apart. However, as we scamper away from the G20 and ease on over to France for the big NATO summit, we had the riot police storming G20 protesters' squats as the violence has moved to France, and police have tear gassed hundreds of anti-NATO protesters already. Links to the Associated Press, the Daily Mail, AP, Wikipedia, Raw Story. Police clashed with hundreds of protesters on the eve of a NATO summit in Strasbourg Thursday, firing tear gas at the crowd to stop them entering the city center, an AFP correspondent reported. Masked protesters smashed a dozen bus shelters, set fire to trash bins, and built a street barricade in a south suburb of Strasbourg after marching from a peace camp set up by activists on the outskirts of the French city. Police said 600 people took part, but organizers put the number at 2,000.
Leaders move on from here to the NATO summit in Strasbourg tomorrow. Police there have already used tear gas to disperse a crowd of 800 to 900 people, and tens of thousands of demonstrators have descended on the city in two southwest German towns nearby. Well, let's go live now to Strasbourg. Our Europe correspondent Alex Rossi is there. It doesn't augur too well, the scenes we've already seen unfold today.
Well, the ceremony doesn't start until tomorrow, but nobody's told the anti-NATO protesters. About 800 or 900 today in Strasbourg tried to break through a central cordon to get into the central area of the city. They were broken up by police, who did actually have to use tear gas at one time. Others jeered through the streets holding scaffolding poles. We understand that a French television satellite van had its windows broken. But the organisers here are saying that the noise made by these anti-NATO voices should not drown out what is essentially, or should essentially, they claim, be a celebration. The 60th anniversary of a military alliance that they say is, broadly speaking, kept Europe at peace. Now, there will be three areas for discussion tomorrow. They'll talk, of course, about the relationship with Russia. How should Russia be treated? Should it be treated as an enemy, or should it be treated as a partner of a pan-European peace? They will, of course, also discuss the issue of Afghanistan. How to reverse the damage caused by a resurgent Taliban? I think we'll hear for calls for more troops and also for more money. That might not go down with some members of the alliance. And of course, I suppose the third central area for discussion, the big framework really, what should NATO's role be in the 21st century? Should it be a reactive fighting force to be deployed around the world? Or should it be a kind of globocop, the world's policeman, a subcontractor to the United Nations? Can it afford to do that? Those will be the areas up for discussion tomorrow as NATO moves into its seventh decade.
And all I can say is, we're in big trouble. So that's the lowdown on the lowlifes at the G20 and NATO summits. I'm sure we will see more analysis and updates as the weekend spills on. However, like a blast from the past, Cheniacs, Peniacs, and the controlled opposition, and you. So we note at the top of this posting, so we're going to get a lot of phony left-right paradigm, gatekeeping, controlled opposition, blustering. Both wings of this phony bird are ratcheting up the rhetoric. So we have to make sure we don't get too distracted by the false left-right paradigm. Again, the gatekeepers, for the most part, can easily see all the inadequacies and corruption of the other side. But when the tables turn and theirs are in, they're blind to it. One party's in favor. The party out of favor is virulently making up all their connections and bluster and all they can do. And then when the party switch, it's the steam valve. They keep each other propped up. And occasionally, you know, they'll let you break some shit and make you think you're getting somewhere. They let out a little bit of steam so we don't explode. And again, all these things that for many years were in the purview of crazy conspiracy theorists, it's all more or less completely been laid bare. Now, of course, no. We still need our Zapruder film of 9/11. But as far as the banksters, the Federal Reserve, the New World Order, false flag terrorism, much of this has been exposed. So, another revelation from Pulitzer Prize winning investigative journalist Seymour Hersh. He was on NPR's Fresh Air, then he went on Olbermann to talk about Cheney and his stay-behind units in the Obama government. Cheney has moles in the Obama government. So again, we use terms like stay-behind units. That is from Operation Gladio. That's state-sponsored terror. Cheney has moles. should we be surprised by that at all? And again, I always posit the question, is it possible that someone like Hirsch is there to lead the left to the things they're supposed to pay attention to? Cheney's got moles in Obama's government.
What is Dick Cheney still doing? What will he do? How will all this affect our relations in the Middle East? Earlier this month, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist Seymour Hersh spoke quickly about a previous story on Cheney, amplifying his report that special forces in the Joint Special Operations Command, JSOC, were getting clearance for assassination targets, not through legal chains of command, but through Cheney, illegally. And that Cheney blocked congressional efforts to learn more about the JSOC missions, rejecting clearance requests from congressional investigators already approved for top-level clearance on other matters. In the new issue of The New Yorker, Mr. Hersh reports that before the inauguration, when the president-elect was helping persuade Israel to end its bombing of Gaza and withdraw ground troops, in private, Cheney was telling Israel not to trust Obama because he was, quote, pro-Palestinian and, quote, not ready for the major leagues. But now we come to the reason for speaking to Mr. Cheney in the present and future tense. In an interview yesterday with NPR, Hersh said that Cheney installed people called stay-behinds at, quote, a lot of agencies who are not only reporting back to Cheney, especially in the military and national security, both keeping him informed and probably, Hersh says, up to a point still controlling policy, including even Bush-Cheney people still now working ostensibly in the Obama-Biden White House.
Are you saying that you think Vice President Cheney is still having a chilling effect on people who might otherwise be coming forward and revealing things to you about what happened in the Bush-Cheney administration?
I'll make it worse. I think he's put people left. He's put people back. But they call it a stay behind. It's sort of an intelligence term of art. When you leave a country and you're driven out there, you've lost the war, you leave people behind. It's a stay behind that you continue to have contact with to do sabotage, whatever you want to do. Cheney's left to stay behind. He's got people in a lot of agencies that still tell him what's going on, and particularly in defense, obviously, and also in the NSA. There's still people that talk to him. He still knows what's going on. Can he still control policy up to a point? Probably up to a point, a minor point, but he's still there. He's still a presence. And again, because of the problems this administration is having filling jobs, a lot of people who served in the Bush-Cheney government, but even in the White House, people on most sophisticated staffs are still there. You simply can't get rid of everybody. You may not even want to. Some are professional people. But Cheney is, I would never call it admiration. But formidable. Yeah, this guy is the real McCoy.
Cheney has moles in the Obama government. Is this an important story? Absolutely. Does this expose further the underbelly of executive assassinations and executive action that we've, of course, known about since the 70s in the Church Committee? We've known that this has been going on for a long time. But could this be diversionary to a point? So you get people looking for hidden moles within the Obama government that Cheney put there. However, when you look at the main roster of the Obama administration, it's nothing but a bunch of CFR, Trilateral Commission, globalists on their face. Skull and bones, all of them. And Robert Gates, he's not a very hidden mole, is he? Remember, of course, he was the designated successor and wasn't at the inauguration. In case everything blew up, Robert Gates would have taken the reins. But let's keep moving. Introducing PNAC 2.0, Foreign Policy Initiative. There is a quick note from Rachel Maddow. I was going to play that clip. I don't have time for it. However, it is funny to note. And again, ratcheting up the phony left-right rhetoric, because all she can say is, that's right, because they lost. You lost the election. You're losers. You're scampering off. Y'all, start a new think tank. Phony left-right gatekeeping bluster from the phony progressives at Air America and the Microsoft General Electric Broadcasting Corporation. However, from Raw Replay, and again, there are videos and links, and this is important to note, that the PNAC members, many of them from the original Project for a New American Century, have started a new neocon group. The neocons are back. The same repugs who sold the country on the war in Iraq have formed a new group called the Foreign Policy Initiative, and declaring their last group as mission accomplished. So Rachel Maddow talked to thinkprogress.org and yada yada blah blah blah. PNAC is now Foreign Policy Initiative. Of course, William Kristol, Frank Carlucci, Gaffney, Cheney, Kagan, Friedberg, Fukuyama, Adams, Rowan, Quayle, Rumsfeld, Abrams, Bauer, You'll remember that the folks from the Project for a New American Century wrote a think tank piece called Rebuilding America's Defenses, in which they said they wouldn't be able to pull off their Anglo-American empire unless they had a new Pearl Harbor. So speaking of that false flag 9/11 event, Bush officials facing war crimes charges, that's from digitaljournal.com, I think last year I maybe posted up some satirical thing on April Fool's Day about Bush being arrested or resigning or something. Not a whole lot of fooling going on this time around. However, floated around on April Fool's Day was the story that John Yoo was arrested in Italy. So InfoWars notes, and we do have links to worldproutassembly.org, but this is a hoax. A number of websites were carrying a story claiming that John Yoo, that's, remember, torture memo, president can sexually torture children in front of their parents. If the president does it, it's not illegal. John Yoo, former Deputy Assistant Attorney General of the United States, was arrested in Milan, Italy, and was being held for possible extradition to Spain, where he and five other retired officials who served under Bush are expected to be indicted by a Spanish court for violations of the Geneva Conventions, the Convention Against Torture, and the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. So, that story from the New York Times, Spanish court weighs inquiry on torture for six Bush-era officials. There's a lot in there, more from the AFP, as well as Think Progress and Voice of America. And I'll just note that, of course, always beware your sources. We have discovered from Jim Tucker and the American Free Press, as well as others, that it is believed that the aforementioned Bilderberg Group is going to meet in Athens, Greece on May 14th. A quick note about Palin and Scientology, apparently. Palin's advisor and his secret Scientology plot was outed. That's from Raw Story, as well from Scoop out of New Zealand. Contrary to Palin's advisor, Scientology political action committees exist. Politics makes for strange bedfellows. Lastly, on this, Cheney Act, PNAX, the controlled opposition, and you, we note, surprise, Leahy suggests that the Truth Commission might not happen. Again, from thinkprogress.org, in a meeting on Monday with Vermont citizens, Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, admitted that the Truth Commission he has advocated to examine Bush administration crimes like torture most likely won't happen. Reporter Charlotte Dennett writes that Leahy said political opposition was too strong to overcome. Links in there to Consortium News, Andrew Sullivan. And again, we've mentioned several times this supposed truth commission that's going to come out. But now, surprise, surprise, it doesn't look like it's going to anyway. And now we're knocking on the door of hour number two of episode 117 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's April 3rd, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, Media Monarchy, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and revereradionetwork.com. KBFR in Boulder, and Free Radio Olympia in Washington. I thank you for help in spreading these words, these ideas, these memes, this research, this news, these politics, these conspiracies. Once again, I had to do it. There are times when the news piles up on me so much that I just have to basically post it all up as headlines. And again, hope that, one, I'm putting it on the record, it's there, you can search it out and find it later, and two, that you will find it now or later. April is the cruelest month. And will summer surprise us? We're first going to get into Obamasiah and the Apostles of War.